WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So on page one of Sunday's New York Times, David Gonzalez had a wonderful story about one immigrant family in Queens. Don't worry, they don't come from Mexico or attend St. Francis Prep. About one immigrant family in Queens torn by their mixed immigration status. The father and mother are here illegally from Ecuador, as is their firstborn daughter, now an adult. We will hear from her in a minute. Their second child, a son, now a junior in high school, was born here, so he is a U.S. citizen. The article raises the issues around mixed immigration status families, as well as the complexities of this one family's relationships, like how the U.S. citizen son wants to leave the United States and the undocumented daughter wants so much to stay. So as I said, we'll talk to that daughter and to New York Times reporter David Gonzalez now. Welcome back, David. And Marissa, we'll call you Marissa. Welcome to WNYC. Hi there.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Brian. Thanks.
David, why did you want to report on mixed status families and why this one?
I think about a year and a half ago, we were sitting around the paper discussing how are we going to tackle the immigration issue? What kind of series would we do? And we started, you know, talking about issues of immigration, employment, things like that. And in the back of my mind, I just started thinking, what's it like growing up in a family where one child is born here and the other one isn't? What's the dynamic in that family? What are the opportunities missed? What are the opportunities gained? And let's take a look at a family that is facing that right now in this country. I also wanted to look at families that perhaps had maybe came to this country with some skills. I think the predominant image out there is that these are all campesinos from Puebla that are working as day laborers or gardeners or whatever. And there's a growing group of people who come with professional skills already in this country, increasingly. And so that's kind of like what I was looking for, to give a different face to this situation and to perhaps stimulate some thought on the consequences of these young people who come here through no will of their own and then do everything they're expected to do, stay out of trouble, go to school, even volunteer and become good, you know, community citizens, if you will, and then at the end of it all realize they're not citizens, they can't go to college perhaps, they can't do all these other things.
And Marissa, how old were you when your parents came here with you?
I was 14 years old when I came to the United States, and I went to 10th grade in high school.
Did you speak English when you came?
No. Actually, I went to ESL. They sent me to the second level. I could barely say really basic expressions in English, so it took me a while to learn writing and speaking the language. So it was a long process, but I worked hard for it.
It sounds like you did really well, and it's harder when you come at 14 than when you come at 4 or 2. So
right.
I guess you must be only in your early 20s or so now.
Yes, I'm 22.
So, you know, you did great on that score. You, as the article tells us, you did go to a CUNY school because they don't check by a matter of policy in New York State. But you can't get the jobs that your classmates got when they graduated with the same degree?
Correct. In terms of my job opportunities, they are really limited. I managed to get a few unpaid internships. I got involved in school activities such as student clubs, you know, trying to get the skills that my peers with documents can get. Thank the law that passed in 2002 or 1, sorry, CUNY schools allowed undocumented students to pay in-state tuition rates, so that was a big help for me and my parents.
And listeners, we're going to open up the phones for anyone else in a mixed immigration status family. Tell us your mixed status family story. Are you a sibling, documented or undocumented, when your brother or sister is the other? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Does the U.S.-born sibling take it for granted and the undocumented one yearn to become legalized through the DREAM Act? 212-433-9692, 433-WNYC. And David's article is partly about your brother, Marissa, who can stay here and live your American dream, it sounds like, but doesn't seem to care as much about it. What does he want?
Well, he's a young teenager. He's 17, and everybody at that age, I think, doesn't have a clear idea of what they want in life. However, sometimes he takes things for granted, such as being able to go back to Ecuador and visit family. And it's a sad situation because I'm not holding him accountable for that. It's just something that happened in life. You know, he was born here, I was born in Ecuador. But yeah, sometimes it feels like he's not really taking advantage of this opportunity.
Your mother was a college graduate in Ecuador,
yes. Mm-hmm.
But had to work in a mattress factory when she came here?
Yeah, the first time when we were here, I guess in the early 90s, she had to work in a factory. That's correct. And unfortunately, she has not been able to practice more in her developing her career, where what she studied in Ecuador. But yeah, that's the situation.
So as David frames it in the piece, she's given up her own dreams for you. How does that make you feel?
I think the article was a big eye-opener for me. I didn't know some of the stuff, some of the things that were told in the story, such as the fact that my dad had to drop out of school. He was trying to get his master's, you know, to be able to pay for, you know, home my for my mother and me. It's sad. Yeah, on one hand, I think I learned to appreciate more their sacrifice, the fact that they had to pretty much give up their dreams for me and my brother. So I think the love and the appreciation for the sacrifice is even bigger now.
See, David, if things don't work out in this journalism career, you could go into family therapy.
That's a thought.
And, you know, your mother, I guess you must have known this part, because your mother says in the article that there is a solution to your situation.
Right.
Marry an American citizen.
Yes, which I'm very reluctant to do. For the 7 years that I have lived here in this country, I have totally pushed that option out because I don't even want to think about it. My values don't allow me to do that. But sometimes it gets to a point where I'm really, I feel the frustration deep in my heart. And sometimes, I'm not able to think clearly. And it's the fastest way to fix, quote unquote, situation.
You wouldn't rule out an American citizen, right? You just don't want to look for a husband on that basis.
Not at all. No. First of all, I think I'm too young to get married. I don't want to take marriage as a business, and I don't think it's right for me. But, that's why I think the urgency of the DREAM Act is pretty huge. I mean, this is just my story. Across the country, there are millions of stories such as mine.
And the DREAM Act would give legal status to people like yourself who came here as children through no act of will on their own.
Exactly.
Because their parents brought them here into illegal status. So your parents would remain undocumented under the DREAM Act, but you would get legal status. But what do you say to a lot of listeners who might be out there thinking, well, it's still tough luck because so many parents come here for their children, and as selfless an act as that is, it's still an act of sort of breaking into the United States or overstaying a visa, jumping the line, whatever. And so we shouldn't reward that kind of behavior and encourage others to do it with the DREAM Act.
I think that the system itself, the immigration law system, is in a situation where families and parents have to make tough decisions. I don't think my parents are to blame, or any person who comes here to this country illegally are, you know, have part of the guilt, because the system is broken. I mean, there's no path right now that allows people to come. If there were a line, you know, a feasible process, then definitely people would come that way. But when we have, you know, a system where the quotes are, you know, that you have to wait 10, 20 years sometimes to come to this country, and it's impossible to do it that way. So that's why I think, you know, the urgency to have DREAM Act and to have comprehensive immigration reform is pretty big. I mean, we need to cope with this issue as soon as possible, because, I mean, we cannot have 12 million people live in the shadows.
Marissa, thank you so much for joining us today. I know you have to go. We're going to stay with David for another few minutes.
Sure.
Thank you very much, and good luck to you.
Thanks to you.
Marissa, that's what we're calling her, profiled as an undocumented immigrant, CUNY graduate, in David Gonzalez's piece in the New York Times on the front page on Sunday on mixed immigration status families. But, you know, David, a lot of people will say the law should really change the other way. There are people who are waiting 10, 20 years legitimately to get into the country. And so what shouldn't be is that people like her brother, who happened to be born here but to illegal parents, can automatically get citizenship, that they should be evaluated on the basis of their parents' status.
I mean, I can understand that. When I was reporting this story, I was talking to an immigration lawyer who was showing me some of the wait lists for certain groups of people. And in some cases, you know, people applied 20 years ago and they're still waiting for their hearing right now. They're still back in the home country, if you will. I understand that, you know, from a theoretical level at some point, but also there's the reality that these kids are here and there's a large group of them. And the fact is that somehow we have to deal with this. Now, I'm not saying you provide legalization for all of them, but there has to be, I think, a greater public debate about this that recognizes who these young people are and also what they contribute. In the course of reporting this, I ran into a fair number of young people who really had almost like classic, quote-unquote, American values, if you will. They cared about their family. They cared about education. They cared about civic engagement, even. I mean, one of the things about Marissa that was funny, she didn't talk about this, but she was worried that her brother wasn't doing enough volunteer work in high school, that he only had to do like 20 hours a semester. She said, he could easily do five times that, because that's what she did. So I think these are the kinds of kids that embrace, you know, some of the values that I think we forgot about. The other thing I think is important to look at is we almost look at this as in a vacuum, that these are immigrants who come here and they break the law. We don't look at the larger context, and I think when I was the Central America bureau chief in the New York Times in the early 2000s, I would go to places like El Salvador or Guatemala and go to, you know, small villages in the countryside where people had left to go work in the United States. And you realize that these are people whose local economies were opened up to outside investment thanks to NAFTA or thanks to the other free trade agreements. And so there's free movement of trade and goods. And companies come in and set up maquiladoras in these villages and what have you. But then there's also movement of people, whether or not there's a treaty or not. And you realize that in some of these places, rural development in these countries doesn't exist. So people who were maybe farmers wind up moving to the United States to find a way to support their family, because there's no way for them to stay in their homeland and work at what they have been raised as, whether they're farmers or whatever.
I understand. And I want to take a phone call for you from a legal immigrant who I think is angry at illegal immigrants. George in Brooklyn, do I have that right?
Yes, Brian. Good morning. I want to thank you for taking my call. First of all, I haven't read his article, but I believe he is missing a couple of points. In 1991 and 1992, when I was in this country, there was a rumor. If you bear a child in this country, your parents can get the citizenship. I do have a problem with that philosophy. Same philosophy right now for past 2 years, that there's going to be huge amnesty and the people, they're going to get their migration to this country. It took me 8 years to get my green card, and I got my U.S. citizenship, all legal. And I'm from the same countries in the area of the Middle East, which was the toughest one in 1991-92 because there was a war in Iraq, the first Persian Gulf. My point to all these migrants is this. If you abuse the system and you're causing problems for some of my relatives. I'm trying to get a citizenship for my sister. The application has been sitting up there for 12 years. You can't move it. Why would these people, they want to use their children to get the migration to this country?
George, let me ask you a question, because David's article was so much about mixed immigration status families, where some are legal, some are illegal. That's why there's not more outrage among legal residents, because a lot of them know a lot of illegals who are friends or relatives. Do you have a mixed immigration status community at all that you're in?
Yes, I've known a lot of people from Middle East that they came to this country in the same area. Some of them are my relatives, 91, 92. They made the same mistake, which I was against it. As a single person, I was against it. I said, you guys are crazy. Why would you want to bear a child which you don't know whether he's going to get or she's going to get the citizenship in this country? And what they did, they had, you see, what's happening in the immigration community, I don't know what his article is, and I will definitely read the New York Times article because I buy the New York Times on a daily basis. My point to you is this, Brian. If these reporters like him, they spread this type of rumors, the Dream Act or other things, you encourage the bad habit. What you have to do, you have to encourage the good habit. Mm-hmm. The system has been jammed by a lot of bad habits.
And, George, I'm going to leave it there because we're running out of time. But, David Gonzalez, you want to have a brief word in response to George?
Well, I just wanted to say if he would read the story, I'd encourage him to read the story because I'm not in the business of spreading rumors. And specifically, the issue of people having children here so that the children can grant them their citizenship, we mentioned in the story that that can't happen. It's specifically with this family, too, just to make a very clear point. Point of that we are not saying in the story that, you know, have a kid here and the kid's going to make you a citizen. That is not true. I understand people think that, and this family thought that, the mother thought that until this past summer. But then when she consulted with an immigration lawyer, it became very clear that is impossible. And so I would just encourage the caller. And I understand the caller's anger, and it's palpable in his voice. But read the story, because you realize, you know, we're not saying that have a kid and you'll become a citizen, because the fact of the matter is it's a lot more complicated than that. But people do think these things. The rumors that are out there in the communities, you know, that's out there.
Let's hear someone's mixed immigrant status family story. Vanja in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Tell us about your family.
Okay, so I also came to the States when I was 15. I've been here for about 15 years on and off. I recently got married. My husband was here on a student visa, and he had a one-year extension after doing his master's when he worked, and then he had to go back. And now I'm here, and he's in our home country, and we're basically waiting for me to finalize my citizenship to be able to apply for his green card. And then also my father has a green card and my mother doesn't. And they also my father lives here and my mother lives in Europe.
So how were you feeling when you were listening to George just a moment ago?
I mean, I think honestly immigrants are one of the greatest strengths of this country. And I think it's a big problem that to me it isn't clear whether immigrants are going to be sort of inherent part of the future of this country, and electing Barack Obama, I think, was a great step in that direction. And it breaks my heart when people get kind of territorial about I was here first, or I got here this way, or I got here that way. And I know it's a little bit idealistic of me to say that, but I don't know. I think there should be more coherent sort of attitude towards whether this country really wants immigrants to be a big part of its future or not.
Vanja, thank you very much. And David Gonzalez, we're just about out of time, but just by way of political analysis, do you think the Dream Act, which would legalize the immigration status of people who came here as children, you know, through the acts of their parents, bringing them here as kids, do you think that stands a good chance of passing now with this Congress and this president?
I think it stands a better chance now than it did before. I think also politically it's probably the easier thing to sell in terms of immigration reform. We're talking about young people who didn't ask to come here, who have stayed in school, or as provided by under the law, also, or would serve 2 years in the military. So these are things where they're contributing to this country, sometimes in very serious ways, if you're talking about, you know, joining the military. So I think, you know, that might be an easier sell politically. I think also the calculus in terms of the Congress has changed in terms of numbers of people who could be supporting it. And so it probably has a better chance than before, but, you know, you have to wait until the final vote, obviously.
Right. I hear them rail against it on conservative talk radio, so they don't back down on the DREAM Act, and yet I could see why this is sort of the first piece of legislation up, because it singles out a particular group of illegal immigrants who might be the most politically sympathetic, the children who had no choice in the matter and were maybe very young, maybe much younger in most cases than the 14 in our guest case. Well, David Gonzalez, New York Times correspondent, did write this piece. It's very long, but it's a wonderful profile of this particular mixed immigration status family from Ecuador, now living in Queens, on the front page of Sunday's New York Times. David, thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian. Take care.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we'll check in on the progress of the government reaction to the flu outbreak. And looks like we'll have time for a few phone calls on the question, how do you think the authorities have done? Have they done a good job at the New York City level, New Jersey or New York State level, Connecticut, and at the federal level? Give us a call. How have they done in handling the flu outbreak, in your opinion? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692.